This is post-production Matthew Marissa. This episode was recorded, I want to say, June or July of 2024, and due to technical reasons, did not actually come out until, well, now. Also, it's a two-parter, so hang in there for that. The original intro has been scrapped because it involved things that happened in 2024 that are no longer relevant or new. So we're going straight into the action with this one. Have fun.
I'm connecting to the internet.
Internet.
Networking software.
World Wide Web.
The web.
Computer today.
Computer.
NetSurfer Pro.
Today we are talking about the album GNVFLA, or Gainesville, Florida, by the band Less Than Jake. And that means it's time to go into the fact corner.
The Fact Corner.
Okay, so, a bit about the band Less Than Jake. It was formed with guitarist Chris DeMakes and drummer/songwriter Vinny Fiorello. They were originally in a band together with their friend Sean Grief, but after their friend moved away, they needed to look for new members. Later, they met Roger Lima at the University of Florida, and Roger Lima took over as sort of the lead singer and guitarist that Sean was. And then, of course, later they added a horn section and expanded the size of the band. Their first album was released in 1995, called Pezcore, because Vinny Fiorello and Roger Lima both really liked Pez dispensers.
That's a good reason.
But they wouldn't really see a breakout until 98's Hello Rockview, which you may have heard the song All My Best Friends Are Metalheads, notable for being in the Digimon movie. Absolutely wild pick there.
All My Best Friends Are Metalheads is also in Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 4, fun fact.
Oh, okay. But they've actually been in multiple Tony Hawk games.
True, for example.
Yeah, so after Hello Rockview was another very popular album, Anthem, which has such hits as Look What Happened and probably their most famous or second most famous song, The Science of Selling Yourself Short.
This is also where That's Why They Call It a Union came from, which was in Tony Hawk's Underground 2.
Yeah. So Anthem was huge. And what do they follow it up with but In With the Out Crowd? Now, I have a bone to pick with this, but so does the band itself. Anthem came out in 2003. Their next album, In With the Out Crowd, came out either a year or two later, but it was mostly pop punk. There was very little horns. And later on, Roger Lima told the publication Louder Songs that this was pretty much forced on them by their producer, their, like, band manager.
It was a mandate from the label.
Yeah. And so they really were unhappy with it. And I think a lot of the fans were as well. It reached a wider audience than their more ska punk focused stuff. Like, my siblings who were into pop punk at the time picked up In With the Out Crowd. And for a long time, that was the only Less Than Jake album I had ever listened to. It has, like, two good songs. I will give it that. But it was really funny because one of those songs, The Rest of My Life, they do play that in tours, but they play a version with horns.
Nice.
Which I think is funny. They're like, we're just going to ska cover our songs we don't like. Our non-skongs.
Yeah, the force of ska is such that even when you are doing your own songs, you're doing a ska cover of your songs.
Ska covers are ska.
Yes.
For more information on the history of ska, listen to the Me, Myself, and Something Else episode. So, yeah, they were pretty unhappy with all that. Gainesville, Florida was released as the album after In With the Out Crowd. GNVFLA released in 2008. And nowadays, when they talk about it, they really put it, like, right after In With the Out Crowd in terms of, like, their own satisfaction or popularity, which is really surprising to me. I do want to note that after GNVFLA, they did Greetings and Salutations, which were two EPs that they later combined into a single LP. That one's really good, has some really great songs. Then 2013, which was a huge year for ska, they released See the Light, which was also really good. And then in 2017, they released Sound the Alarm, which is a song and an album, but the song Sound the Alarm is in the Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 1 and 2 remakes.
Hell yeah. Yeah, speaking of developers that got closed for no good reason.
Yep.
If you want to play it, definitely don't pay for it. That's all I'll say.
So, here's the thing. In 2017, after Sound the Alarm, Vinny Fiorello left the band. At first, he was just leaving as a touring drummer, focusing on, like, recording mainly. But eventually, the band announced he was leaving part-time. Fiorello is really interesting. He's, like, a serial entrepreneur. He started a few businesses locally to Gainesville, including, like, a weed store, I think.
Nice. Based.
But more notably, he founded two record labels, one of which is Paper Plus Plastic, which is a bit smaller. But he was one of the founders of Fueled by Ramen.
Wait, sorry, really?
Yeah. Fueled by Ramen was the label for a lot of big pop punk acts in the 2000s, notably Paramore and Fall Out Boy, which we talked about on the Infinity on High episode. So that's super surprising. Fiorello was also the main songwriter and lyricist, though. And so after Sound the Alarm, it's mainly Roger Lima and a little bit of Chris DeMakes, from what I understand. But Vinny Fiorello was a huge part of sort of the lyrics of the band. Now, Roger Lima...
Oh, boy.
He's not canceled, which is not a good start anyways.
Yeah, that's not a... So, for some clarity, I do not have a whole lot of history. This is another episode where I am the one kind of coming in blind with Less Than Jake, aside from a lot of the specific songs that I've heard off of stuff like Tony Hawk. And so when you phrased the intro how you did, essentially, it kind of made me go like, oh, are they problematic?
So, okay, here's the thing. There are problematic ska bands. There are actual, like, Nazi punks and they can fuck off.
Yes, that one I did know.
So, like, there are controversial figures. Dickie Barrett from Mighty Mighty Boss Tones, who had a whole anti-vax spiel that fractured the band entirely.
I'm not surprised.
And now he has essentially a supergroup of canceled ska band artists.
It's the Avengers of Shitheads.
Which is hilarious, but also dumb. Roger Lima isn't as bad. So he's huge into collectibles. He's huge into Pez dispensers. He collects comics. And he regularly auctions those types of things off on, like, live streams.
Oh, no. Oh, I know where this is going, don't I?
Of course, being hugely into collectibles.
No.
So, like, he is, I think, a big part of sort of the band's brand identity. They're known for having ridiculous limited items, like cereal boxes and skateboards and stuff.
Yeah.
Skateboards are a little less ridiculous, but he is also into crypto. He doesn't post about it as much, but he still does every now and then. But in, like, 2019, in the middle of the NFT boom, he minted Less Than Jake NFTs. This was a super controversial move, as you would expect.
Yeah.
The concept was that it's supposed to be, like, a fan club membership you could resell. I think that's dumb, because for one thing, fan clubs don't need you to resell. You could just have a wait list. The only reason you would resell something is if you want to make money off of the thing you bought. But, like, I feel like for a fan club, that's kind of pointless. Like, I feel like the use case for this is just for people to scalp fan club memberships.
Yeah.
Whereas, like, if you really wanted to be in the fan club and you didn't want to anymore, you could just ignore it. You could just say, like, take me out, and then they could, like, call up somebody on a wait list. Like, I don't know. It's stupid. Not a good use case. There's not a good NFT use case.
I would like to say they couldn't actually say take me out because that is copyrighted to Franz Ferdinand, so.
Yep. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, while Roger Lima was very adamant about it in sort of the NFT boom, I don't really know the status nowadays. I'm sure they're still traded, but I have no idea if it's really coveted or even that respected by the other members of the band. Roger just kind of gives off the vibe of somebody who's super into collectibles, but, like, somehow that doesn't mesh with the artist side of him.
Yeah. I think that what you said of, like, he isn't canceled, but it's still kind of something to bring up, essentially, is more or less how to react to it.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause, you know, during that period, there were also a whole bunch of NFTs by a whole bunch of creators that people liked, and... You know, Zootamayo made NFTs, lest we forget, unfortunately.
Oh, I forgot.
As did Tony Hawk as well.
Yeah.
And realistically, it's more like some marketing agency came out to them and was like, we're going to make NFTs. And they're like, sure. But yeah, very unfortunate. I wouldn't be like, he should lose all of his credibility because of this. But it is kind of like a, you know, a little dark stain on it, basically. Mm-hmm. A little Katy Perry dark horse on an otherwise Katy Perry California girls band.
Well, Florida.
Oh, yeah, sorry. Katy Perry. Is there a Flo Rida song that Katy Perry has had? There has to be. Anyway.
There has to be.
Flo Rida has been with everyone. Flo Rida has been with less than Jake. He hasn't actually been with less than Jake.
I don't think he has. Yeah, it's a weird look for a punk frontman, is how I would put it.
Yeah.
It's not completely unprecedented given his history, but yeah.
I think it's good to, you know, put that aside and be like, that sucks, but, you know, we're gonna kind of compartmentalize that when we talk about the rest of this.
Yeah, that's why it's kind of hard for me to say they're one of my favorite bands, but, like, their music hasn't really shown anything of that. Like, it feels like Roger Lima mostly keeps that separate from the music, except for, like, a few moments of merchandising.
Yeah. And I will also even say that, like, even for a punk band, there's, you know, there's kind of a contingency online of people who are, you know, oh, if you are punk or whatever, you can't make any money off of anything ever. And collectibles are kind of their own topic, but I will say I don't fuck with that. You can, in fact,
yeah,
make money off your stuff and still be punk and, you know, big. Tom Morello recently did a little show for a Palestinian protest. And he's fucking awesome, so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, that's a whole other thing. I definitely think people take selling out way too seriously. And a lot of bands do rely on limited runs of merchandise, but that's more so just because they can't keep permanent runs of merchandise.
Yeah.
So, like, they have tour shirts, you know. Shirts for tours are completely commonplace, and oftentimes they end up as memorabilia or collectibles, but they're not really intended to be that way. They're just shirts for a moment in time.
Yeah.
It's just to commemorate the tour. But, like, once the tour's done, they don't keep the shirts around anymore. So it's, like, the utility of why they would do this in sort of the purpose of it leads to being collectibles, but they're not intended to be rare.
Yeah.
I mean, there are artists that do limited stuff. Coheed has a ton of stuff like that. That's beside the point.
I also do want to say that selling out also, you can't say that that's actually owned by Real Big Fish. So
yeah,
you're going to have to bleep that in the edit.
Going back a bit, Less Than Jake are from Gainesville, Florida. The album is about Gainesville, Florida, and I want to talk about Gainesville, Florida.
Yes.
I have done a bit of research about Gainesville, Florida. Thank you to the... So, okay, big thing. Gainesville is a college town. The University of Florida is there, as well as one of the main branches of University of Santa Fe. Being a college town, it has a huge music scene and art scene. There's a lot of musicians from there. Like, for example, Tom Petty, Stephen Stills of Crosby, Stills, Nash, two members of the Eagles,
wow.
Against Me. Those are all from Gainesville. And there's countless small bands playing at small venues in Gainesville. Music is huge there. And of course, there is also a big ska contingency there with Less Than Jake, The Know-How, and Jer actually being a pretty prominent one.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
I didn't know that they were from Gainesville.
Yeah. Or at least they went to school there. They're also known for having a pretty big rock fest called The Fest, which is like an annual music festival that usually has a pretty heavy ska presence. Less Than Jake tends to perform there. I know this year Streetlight Manifesto are headlining. A lot of smaller ska bands like Flying Raccoon Suit have been there. I think We Are the Unions played multiple times, so pretty big in that front.
Very nice.
The sort of alt-punk and indie-punk scene, mainly. Now, I've done some research into a pretty notable bit of gentrification. So being a college town, along with, like, the huge amount of, you know, culture, there tends to end up being gentrification that plays off of that culture. This is just kind of how cities happen, and it's shitty, is that, like, people within a community build up the community, and then outside forces come in and see it as a real estate market that is booming without considering why it's becoming big, and so they take over.
Yeah.
In 2005, there was a project called University Quarters that began. This was a large-scale condo residential development that was going to have a $98 million tax incentive from the state. the Florida Supreme Court blocked this from happening because there was no stipulation on how long the tax incentive would be for. And they ruled that if a incentive like that was to last more than a year, it would require annual referendums from the voters. Additionally, there was a few other things, like they didn't have an idea of how much rent would be. So like nobody really knew how that would happen. So ultimately, the construction was blocked.
Good.
After they had already demolished a block's worth of independent businesses.
Oh, that's very not good. Great.
Yeah. So I want to thank, by the way, April Dudash for the University of Florida's Alligator newspaper. Has a lot of good write-ups on sort of the saga of the university corners. So thanks, April Dudash, again, for the source. So I think that's really important, though, because this happened in 2005 through 2007. And GNVFLA was released in 2008.
Yeah.
So just keep that in mind, that there was a huge mess of a thing here, a huge mess of a high-rise condo development project going on. So the actual album GNVFLA, which, by the way, is the Gainesville airport code.
That's very good.
Shouts out to airport codes and music.
Yeah. GNVFLA, YYZ, and that's it.
You just said YYZ, you fucking
Oh
asshole.
No, oh god, I'm so sorry.
You're gonna get canceled by all the Canadian listeners we have.
Oh, jeez, oh man, I'm gonna have to put out an entire apology, and I'm gonna have to, like, redub it in every different language that uses Zed. Oh, jeez.
You're gonna have to do a Quebecois version.
I am le sorry.
So, before we get ourselves into more hot
Yeah,
water,
before I get even more canceled...
GNVFLA, as I said, released in 2008. It is semi-autobiographical. It is a concept album in sort of a way. It is about the titular city and a lot of the band's experiences growing up there and living there, but it is not directly about them. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So, like, I think when it comes to concept albums like this, I say semi-autobiographical because it is heavily based on lived experience, but you do not want to assume that the singer is the actual person who writes the songs. Not, I mean, literally because Roger Lima is, you know, didn't write these songs. These are written by Vinnie Fiorello, who did not sing. But that's beside the point. It's more so that when you think about like analyzing music that has lyrics, typically, I think at least I try to view it in terms of the singer instead of the person, or like the narrator or something like that. It's like how when you're reading a book that is written in first person, you don't necessarily assume the author is the one speaking.
Yeah.
While there's not a distinct, like, this is the character I am playing in this song, that's still sort of the thing you want to go for. I just wanted to make that very apparent because there are a lot of things in this that are tied to the artists, but there are some that are just sort of stories. And I think that's interesting and weird. Because, like, normally when it comes to music, there is a tendency to view it as, like, the pure expression of the singer or the songwriter. And that could be true for a lot of these, but again, there is also a lot that is not directly from their lives. One song in particular, which we'll get to eventually because it's later in the album. But I also just want to note there are a lot of nautical sub-themes and references.
Yes.
So, track one, City of Gainesville.
Off of the album Gainesville, Florida. About yes. The city of Gainesville, Florida.
Yeah. This song is great.
It is.
It opens with, like, it almost sounds like the music is coming through, like, a filter or a speaker. I always think of it as, like, a loudspeaker at either a, like, park, like an amusement park or a public pool, or, like, a speaker in a supermarket.
Yeah.
Almost. It has a little bit of, you know, low pass sort of filtering, a little bit of distortion, a little bit of compression. It's a little quiet, but I think it adds to the lyrics of the song.
Speaking of the lyrics, I think this has one of the best just opening lines of a like concept album I've heard. Like, we had our master plan bottled in can living on the 352. Immediate industrial themes, immediate, you know, disenfranchisement. I love that. I love that so much. I was actually kind of surprised when you said that Gainesville was a small town, was a college town, because I had kind of gotten the vibe from a lot of the songs, that it was like, you know, a very industrial, sort of like a Kansas City type, you know, an industrial town that has since lost a lot of its luster. Now, that is possibly just because we live in St. Louis, and so, you know, we have that kind of background. But
yeah,
the thesis is immediately very clear, and it's such a good opener. I love the recurring themes as well. I like your point of it sounds like it came through like a supermarket, you know, a supermarket speaker, because supermarkets are also like referenced. This is turning into a strip mall kind of town. Another lovely line. So like we sort of immediately get that vibe of like, this is a town that the singer, or, you know, the narrator has been in for a long time, and it's been clearly changing towards a, you know, a very consumerist, a very, you know, against the tide of what the singer has wanted, like has grown up in.
Yeah, I think so. The bottle and can part is pretty important, because one of the main running themes of the album is addiction, and the bottle especially is just like bottles of alcohol. He says later in the song, like, use my credit card to buy alcohol and walk home drunk, wake up confused.
Yeah.
Those are both like a clear cycle of like spending all of your money on booze just to like escape the crushing loneliness and emptiness so much that you can't remember how you got home the previous night, and then just doing that again. The master plan is sort of getting people hooked on booze.
Yeah. Alcohol is a very recurring theme as well, which I feel like is more, you know, escapism, essentially. It's the opiate of the masses. Yeah. It's, you know, if you can't do anything about your situation, you buy alcohol.
Well, yeah, alcohol is one of the facets of addiction, I think, that are present, but it's the main one. Also, so the lines, walk home drunk, wake up confused, those come up later again. That's sort of a motif. And then also, later on, he mentions the smoky room. He says, like, sleep tight in the smoky room. That also comes up later.
Yeah.
Keep those in mind. I think City of Gainesville is really interesting because it's, like, a weirdly hopeful song, but I feel like it's more out of ignorance than out of optimism.
The final line of both verses?
Chorus.
Maybe?
Actually, no, yeah, I guess it is just like two verses, and the chorus is purely instrumental, so.
Yeah, the final line of both
Vorses.
Oh, no. The final line of both choruses is, I may be going broke, but I'm never broken down. Which, I like your vibe of, like, it's, you know, it's trying to find positives, it's trying to, you know, be hopeful, but it does seem more born out of, like, oh, I'm broke, but I'll be fine, even though we kind of know, you know, you won't.
Yeah, exactly.
We as the audience know that this is going to be a lot harder than the narrator seems to think it will.
It's ironic, in a way.
It's called dramatic irony.
I also just want to mention, there's the line, Promised Land with a Twist of Fate. I can't help but think about how famously Ponce de Leon thought that the Fountain of Youth was in Florida. And that's a big reason why the Spanish settlers, or Spanish colonists, I should say, went to Florida.
Yeah.
See also The Secret, the treasure hunt book that has a whole thing about that. We'll talk about The Secret at some point in the future, I swear to God. So, City of Gainesville pretty much immediately transitions to State of Florida, which is both about the state of Florida, but also the state of the state of Florida. Huh? It's double entendre.
Ah!
Yeah, it's clever. It's clever. It describes a shitty place to live.
Florida.
Yeah.
They could have just said the word Florida, and, yeah, you know, I would have gotten most of it.
The first line of State of Florida is, he says Florida's slowly sinking.
Yeah! Oh, this one was an instant like, because the music, like, picks up. It's just, this is one of those songs that kind of punches you in the face, basically. Like, it starts and it is immediately like, ba-na-na-na-na-na. Yeah, he says Florida's slowly sinking into the ocean. I love the line as well. He says the housing tracts are built on half fact and the rest half fiction. Amazing. Obvious reference to, you know, Florida's near the coastline that's ever growing. There's also,
you mean the coastline's ever shrinking?
Yes, ever shrinking
from global warming.
There's also, like, I'm reminded of, this is Louisiana, this is New Orleans, but, like, I believe Florida has this as well, where, you know, a lot of beachfront property is made on really bad land that, like, you know, will very clearly deteriorate because people are interested in the house and not interested in any long-term effects.
Mm-hmm.
Also, this song has a City Skylines reference.
City Skyline hasn't looked the same since they made a new one. Yeah.
I agree. So
this is why I wanted to bring up the University Corners sort of project, because having that happened sort of while the songwriting process for this album was going on, I think made an impact that this major scandal of urbanization and, like, gentrification was happening, and now, like, Less Than Jake is singing about the boom in South Florida's real estate.
Yeah. I like the sort of the first half seems to be focused on the things in Florida, but I like the line in the second verse of where latchkey kids from divorces, transplants, and foreign tourists fill up vacation spots, turn to trailer pots because the state is fading. So, like, it starts, you know, focusing on sort of like the real estate, the glass and steel, the physical stuff, but it starts to, you know, really take an eye more towards the people in it, the people who are actually affected by these sorts of things. A boom town gone dust, a gold mine to dust.
Yeah, exactly. I think, like, this is sort of what really interests me about Florida, is that you have what was not only is there Disney, which I think is the huge main thing people focus on, but even outside of Orlando, there's a ton of little, like, vacation stops. I'm thinking, I don't remember the name of it, but Creature from the Black Lagoon was filmed at an actual park you can go to and take a boat ride in, and it's very cool. It's a cool place, yeah. And I say it gets colder. But, like, it is a state that kind of subsists in a lot of ways off of impermanent residents.
Yeah.
And that negatively affects the permanent residents a lot of the times.
Yeah, tourist industries are oftentimes somewhat controversial, especially in places that have a lot of economic instability, because, you know, why are you prettying up this, you know, side of the town for people who don't live here when people are fucking starving? I love the last line in the chorus of too much, too soon, too little, too
great
late.
Line.
Yeah. It's such a good, like, little encapsulation of, like, too much, too soon, too little, too late. We are throwing money at, you know, at things. We're throwing money at property because we are trying to, you know, attract people or what have you, but too little, too late. We're, you know, we have people here already that you should be taking care of, that, you know, you should be focused on. It's such a good, you know, turn of phrase to capture the little, to capture the paradox of economic instability. I also think that this probably wasn't directly in mind, but the fact that this came out in 2008 was also probably really good timing considering the 07-08 housing collapse. And so, you know, they were on right at the cusp of a massive economic shift as well. And I feel the themes throughout the album as well, if not directly reference it, reflect the time very well.
Yeah.
And God knows that we're still living in somewhat similar conditions.
Yep. Oh yeah, I also wanted to mention, so this is a really cool bit where City of Gainesville is a very ska song. It has sort of the syncopated strokes, not quite the full-on regular rhythm that ska typically has, but it does have sort of the upstrokes in the back, with the horns playing a major part of the lead melody. City of Gainesville does not. City of Gainesville has, I think, no horns, which is really interesting when you consider the events of their previous album. I feel like it's interesting that the song about the mass gentrification of Florida has no horns, and then, like, the songs before and after it do. That is, it feels like a conscious decision of using the instruments in this case to show, like, hey, so much of the band is, like, not doing anything on this song because this is what our producer wanted us to do. This is essentially musical gentrification.
Yeah.
So next song is Does the Lion City Still Roar? Which, Lion City, as far as I'm aware, is not like a normal connotation for Gainesville. I don't think it has like a nickname like the City of Angels or the Brothers City or City of Brotherly City? City Love? Brother Man? The Windy City or Chicago, you know? Anyways, that being said, this does go back to Ponce de Leon, Florida, Town of Youth, Lions, whatever. This is a song that is, I think, more directly about the experience of living in the city.
Yeah.
Whereas, so City of Gainesville was sort of being ignorant to the problems of the city, and then State of Florida is more a general overview. This is like you are on the streets of the city.
Yeah.
A big part is that, like, the Lion City is just full of, like, people who are just really down, like, addicts, overdosers.
Yeah, it's a lamentation for, like, the you know, the drug addicts, the crime-addled population, the losers of society, essentially, the people that society throws to the wayside. I also like Lion City sirens sing the night away, night away. Sirens as in police sirens, but also, like, mythological sirens, you see.
Yeah.
That's good.
Police sirens or ambulance sirens.
Also true.
But yeah, like, so sirens, of course, draw sailors to their deaths using song. And that goes back to the sinking state. That the sinking of the state is not necessarily a physical, like, geological shift, which it is because of global warming, but also, like, sirens, in this case, things like drugs or addiction or stuff like that, are calling people to their deaths. Sinking is a huge sort of concept in this album, this concept album.
I'm a big fan. I think the last line I want to shout out is in the bridge. The city seems like it's trapped between its future and its past. Life or death of a city not coming back.
Mm-hmm.
That one somewhat resonates with me as we live in St. Louis. We've brought this up before. And St. Louis is kind of like the world's smallest big city, basically. It's the big city equivalent of a small town. And it really resonated with me because that's kind of how I often feel about St. Louis, is kind of like, it's a city that, you know, is great, was great, but, like, is also way past its prime and feels like it's never going to be, you know, big and truly important again.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a great song. I really like it. It's the first song I heard off the album. It's a lot more of a typical ska punk, I guess. It has Loud, Quiet, Loud.
Yep, yep.
Sort of. It has the rhythmic strums. It's a good song. Also, it does have Powder Keg as a sort of reference or a metaphor. And I always think of pirate ships when I think of powder kegs.
Yep, yep, yep.
Yep. Next song, Summon Monsters.
Drugs.
This one's pretty cool.
I like this.
So yeah, this one's about drugs. It's pretty great. It's interesting. So it's both about, like, illegal drugs, but also prescription drugs. I think about how, like, there was sort of the whole thing of prescribing kids, like, ADHD medicine instead of addressing the classroom situations that cause kids to sort of act out.
Yeah, the over-prescription of Ritalin during the 2000s was kind of... It was both, unfortunately, the source of a lot of that, like, I'm not taking pills to be a zombie bullshit, but, like, it was a recurring issue because, yeah, like you said, we were just sort of throwing drugs at the problem, throwing drugs at the future generations, and not really addressing the actual issues.
Though I ended up having both problems, problems with the school sort of system that's in place, but also ADHD.
Same. I never got medicated for mine. That's...
We don't need to get into that right now.
Yep. I like the term money to monsters and, you know, summoning monsters. I like that as a metaphor as well, because monsters in this feels like a metaphor for, like, you know, drug dealers. But it, you know, like you said, it's drug dealers in both the illegal sense and the legal sense. And so it feels like it's kind of skewering the way we will be very happy to, you know, say, ah, drugs, bad. Drug addicts, bad. But not really, you know, not throw that kind of shame to over-prescription of opiates, over-prescription of blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, so this song is sympathetic to drug users. It is not sympathetic to the people who take advantage of vulnerable populations.
Yes, very much.
In this case, it's, like, students. That's specifically the thing, is that, like, sons and daughters are referenced and lockers are referenced.
It's focused not just on addicts, but kids who are addicts.
Yeah. I also want to bring up the name Summon Monsters or Summoning Monsters is, like, very specifically, like, a fantasy thing. I feel like this has sort of an element of the satanic panic.
Ah.
Think of, like, it feels like to me, like, they're saying, like, you thought that, you know, kids playing D&D and summoning monsters was bad. There's actual monsters out there that you don't care about.
Yeah.
That's sort of what it feels like to me in a way. Because, like, the term summon monster is just such a very specific thing. It could just be that they saw it in, like, a book and they were like, oh, that's a cool name for a song. But, like, I feel like the metaphor does kind of extend into the contents of the song.
Yeah. Honestly, I saw the term summoning monsters, or I saw the name summon monsters, and for a minute was like, that sounds like a Call Me Malcolm song. Like, that sounds like a Call Me Malcolm title. You know, also
the monster, wake up, the monster said.
True.
I mean, it is a D&D spell.
Yes.
And yeah, I feel like that's an interesting bit there. The name just always really stuck with me. And like, the song doesn't have a ton of relation to monsters. It has monster in the chorus and all that. But like, I think that's sort of the connection, is that like, people took D&D so seriously, but they don't take other actual problems their children have seriously.
Yeah. It's sort of, you know, zeitgeist rather than real issues.
Yeah. Next is Abandoned Ship.
Yep. Continuing the nautical theme.
Yep.
This one I have kind of less to say about. It's a good song, but like, a lot of it is the, you know, the ship theme, the nautical theme. I do like the opening line of, give me some more TV, make it loud. I like that, you know, that idea of, you know, distract me from the world.
I'm in desperate need for some company. Like, having the illusion of somebody around you just coming through the TV is, like, equivalent to being around people.
Especially after the line of, give me some religion past the wine. So it kind of feels like another line about, you know, the opiate of the masses, more or less. It's trying to deal with the situation out there with what you have here.
Yeah, like, the communion isn't just this holy ritual. He's just using it to get drunk and deal with problems that way. It's the most overtly nautical, but also like the subject is very, very personal and introspective of like different forms of sort of coping that aren't necessarily healthy, ultimately into a like call for help. This song reminds me a lot of Jesus of Suburbia, especially like the first movement of Jesus of Suburbia.
Yeah. That was the line in my head that I was thinking of, was get my television fixed, sitting on my crucifix.
Exactly, yeah.
I also like the recurrence of the religious theme in the later thing of like, I'll sit and read the lyrics like...
Give me some more music, I'll sit and read the lyrics like a Bible, a gospel, a sing-along.
Yeah, it feels like it's not, you know, it's not specifically being like, oh, religion bad. It's just sort of like, it's using that idea of, you know, religion as just sort of a form of dealing, a form of, you know, escapism itself.
Yeah, and yeah, the ship is sinking, but he is already in the water, having dove in, and now he's just trying to tread water. Continues the sinking sub-theme alongside the more general nautical.
Yep, wasn't that a great part one? We're gonna have to continue this discussion in part two. But for now, thank you for listening. You can follow us on any podcasting platform you like. Give us a like, give us a rating, give us a review. Let us know how we're doing. Let us know what you would want to see us cover next, or things that you think we might be interested in. You can also follow us on, what's that one website? It has like a bird on it.
Blue Kai.
Oh, Kai Kisuke. Yeah, from Guilty Gear. You can follow us on Blue Sky at netsurferpro.beastguys.social. And you can also find us on Twitter at netsurferpro. You can find us on YouTube, by the way. We're on YouTube now. We're NetSurferPro on YouTube. We upload our episodes there. That's about it. You can follow me online at Twackaroo or at twack.beastguy.social, T-W-A-K or T-W-A-K-A-R-O-O. I mainly post on Blue Sky nowadays for pretty obvious reasons for most people. I post a lot of hot takes, a lot of commentary on things I'm liking or doing, lots of pinball posting. And I also stream on twitch.tv/twack, T-W-A-K again, where recently I've been streaming through the games of UFO 50 and a lot of Civilization 7. Interesting, isn't that?
And as for myself, you can find me on YouTube and on Blue Sky at Gillen Wilson. That's at G... Wait, no, hang on. And as for myself, you can find me on TikTok and on Blue Sky at Galen Wilson. That's at GalenWilson0n, where I post my hot takes and usually a lot of opinions about whatever video game I've been playing. You can find me on YouTube at TheOnlyGalen on YouTube, and you can find me at Twitch at twitch.tv/machinegunvampire. I have actually been streaming a little more regularly nowadays, so, you know, subscribe to me there. Subscribe to Twack first, perhaps, because they're the one who actually...
You don't even have a subscribe button.
Yeah, I don't. I just... You have to actually mail in a subscription.